Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Oncology. This podcast aims to provide information on selecting the optimal treatment for patients with chronic myeloid leukemia after two prior lines of therapy. Two experts in chronic myeloid leukemia, Professor Simona Soverini from Italy and Dr. Daniela Žačková from the Czech Republic, discuss questions from the chronic myeloid leukemia clinical community. The question topics cover: how can we best use the current treatment options to optimize outcomes for patients with CML after two prior lines of therapy? What are the new and emerging therapies for the treatment of patients with CML after two prior lines of therapy? And what are the latest clinical trial data? How could new and emerging treatments impact the management of CML after two prior lines of therapy? This activity is funded by an independent medical education grant from Novartis and is provided by Touch IME.
My name is Daniela Žačková and I am consultant in hematology at University Hospital Brno in the Czech Republic. And I am joined today by Professor Simona Soverini, who is based in the Department of Experimental Diagnostic and Specialty Medicine, University of Bologna in Italy. And it's my great pleasure and honor to have Simona here, since she is one of the leading experts in the field of chronic myeloid leukemia biology and treatment, and therefore the best person for the discussion focused on CML patients after resistance and or intolerance to at least two prior lines of treatment. During our interview, we would like to discuss both current treatment options available and the new and emerging therapies and the way how they can be used and implemented into clinical practice to optimize outcome, particularly of CML patients in third and subsequent line setting. In this section, we will discuss how can we best use current treatment options to optimize outcomes for patients with chronic myeloid leukemia after two prior lines of treatment. Treatment options currently available for CML patients include imatinib, first-generation TKI, which introduction into clinical practice more than 20 years ago dramatically improved prognosis of CML patients. Then three more potent representatives of second-generation TKIs, nilotinib, dasatinib, and bosutinib, and until recently the most potent agent from third generation, ponatinib, which was the only one active against multi-resistant D315I mutation. And very recently, asciminib, a first drug of a new class of compounds specifically targeting the ABL myristoyl pocket, was approved. Its mechanism of action, mimicking autoinhibitory effect of physiological ABL, is completely different to ATP competitive inhibition of all other TKIs mentioned previously. So with such a rich and potent TKI armamentarium and a really excellent prognosis of frontline treated CML patients, everything seems to be solved regarding these hematological malignancies. However, treatment of CML patients after two prior lines of treatment is not perfect at all for many reasons. There is a lower rate of responses, which are not durable. There is increasing rate of failure with each subsequent line and even decreasing survival. Selection of appropriate TKI is complicated due to adverse events accumulation, leading to comorbidities, limiting TKI use, and also clear guidelines, both for treatment selection and treatment efficacy assessment, are unfortunately missing. And finally, with sequential treatment, there is an increasing risk of resistant mutation selection. So altogether, there is still a room for improvement and for discussion as well. So Simona, let's look at some questions submitted by our audience. The first one is, what is the best treatment sequence for patients with CML? And could you please summarize the current recommendations from the guidelines?
Thank you, Daniela. Well, the hope, of course, is that we will not need to change the treatment in our patient. But of course, in case of failure, we will have to change. And even in case of warning, we might wish to change to improve the response. So there is neither consensus nor evidence about the best treatment sequence for patients with CML, essentially because there is not a single best treatment sequence. This is something that is very, very, very patient specific. If the patient turns positive for a BCR-ABL kinase domain mutation, then we might have a strong and clear indication for one TKI over the others. But if not, then the ELN does not provide a specific recommendation. They only say that the choice is very much patient specific and depends on its age, comorbidities, risk factors, and previous history of toxicities or adverse events. However, as far as the treatment beyond second line is concerned, the ELN recommendations say that patients should be considered for eligibility to allogeneic stem cell transplantation. And if patients have failed a second generation TKI, then ponatinib should be preferred over another second generation TKI, even in patients without a T315I mutation, even in patients with no mutations at all. However, we must bear in mind that the ELN recommendations, the latest ELN recommendations, have been compiled in 2020, so before asciminib was approved and became available.
Okay, thank you very much. And the next question, what are the factors which can help guide treatment selection after two prior lines of therapy? You a bit covered it in the first answer, but please, could you be more detailed?
Yeah, first of all, it depends on whether prior therapy had to be changed because of toxicity, so because of intolerance or because of resistance. Anyway, on one hand, we have to consider patients' factors, age, comorbidities, risk factors, previous history of toxicity or adverse events, and also what our treatment endpoints. On the other hand, we need to check for BCR-ABL kinase domain mutations, possibly using NGS. Why? Because as you all know, some specific mutations impact on the choice of the subsequent line TKI.
Oh, great. And now, what are the mechanisms of resistance to therapies in the second line and beyond? And are there any molecular characteristics or biomarkers which can help us to recognize treatment failure?
Well, it is believed that the mechanisms of resistance are more or less the same regardless of the line of treatment. They are rather TKI specific. BCR-ABL kinase domain mutations that we have already mentioned stand out among other mechanisms because they are the most extensively investigated ones and also the only actionable ones. So whenever a patient with an unsatisfactory response to TKI therapy turns positive for a TKI-resistant mutation, this is a clear biomarker of failure, and treatment has to be changed right away. Mutations are a sign of genetic instability, which is known to increase over the course of the disease, over the biological evolution of the disease. So patients who have failed two prior lines of therapy, they may have mutations, they may have even more than one mutation, they may have compact mutations. For second line therapy, the ELN recommendations provide clear definitions of failure. you know, based on BCR-ABL transcript levels of specific checkpoints. But for lines beyond the second, so for third line, fourth line, or fifth line, the ELN did not formalize any definition of a satisfactory response. But they importantly stated that BCR-ABL levels greater than 1% or loss of or failure to achieve a complete cytogenetic response that is more or less the same are insufficient for optimal survival of patients.
In this section, we would like to focus on the new and emerging therapies for the treatment of patients with CML after two prior lines of treatment, and we will also review the latest clinical trial data. Regarding TKI efficacy after two prior lines of treatment, looking at probability of complete cytogenetic response achievement over the clinical trials, using second generation TKI in this setting is of limited value. In this context of third line setting, ponatinib, with more than doubling of the rate of CCYR, seems to be the best choice. However, when we look at the tolerability data, particularly focusing on arterial occlusive events, they occurred in almost one third of patients with ponatinib in PACE trial. And even though response-guided ponatinib dose reduction in randomized OPTIC trial diminished their incidence to 10%, the number is still not satisfactory. In this context, recently presented 96-week update of ASSEMBLE trial confirmed not only significant asciminib advantage over bosutinib in terms of efficacy endpoints, but also very good tolerability, including arterial occlusive events, and more than 50% of patients remaining on treatment in comparison to less than 20% of patients in bosutinib arm. We have also some promising treatment options in development or in early phases of clinical trials, such as third generation representative olverembatinib, which showed impressive CCYR rate in these heavily pretreated patients, or for example, vodobatinib, which demonstrated very good efficacy even with ponatinib pretreated patients. So now, Simona, let's look again at some questions submitted by our audience. What are the unmet needs for patients with CML after two prior lines of therapy?
Well, CML patients who have failed two prior lines of therapy do not need just another second-generation tyrosine kinase inhibitor. So far, these patients have mainly been candidate to ponatinib treatment, but they may have cardiovascular risk factors that create concern. And another issue is their mutation status, because these patients have a higher genetic instability. They may have a complex mutation status, for example, with the compound mutations, you know, mutations are arising on the same BCR-ABL molecule, so within the same clone. And there have been recent data suggesting that these compound mutations, at least some of them, those incorporating the T315I mutation, are a problem also for ponatinib. Moreover, the 15 milligram dose of ponatinib that was endorsed by the OPTIC studies as the safer one might favor the reemergence of the T315I mutation or of a pre-existing E255B mutation, because these mutations have an IC50 value that is borderline close to the trough levels we can achieve with 15 milligrams. So overall, there is a space and need for improvement, and there is space and need for novel options.
Yeah, thank you. What are the newly approved treatments, and how will these address unmet needs? And are there any other agents currently in development?
Well, now we have asciminib. Asciminib, as you mentioned in your introduction, is extremely specific since it binds to a pocket that is only present in ABL, ABL-related gene, and BCR-ABL. This means it has very minimal off-target effects, and this in turn translates into very little toxicity. So for sure, asciminib fills the gap in patients with many risk factors and many comorbidities, given its favorable safety profile. Then what about mutations? Given that asciminib binds to a completely different region of BCR-ABL as compared to first and second generation tyrosine kinase inhibitors, ATP competitive molecules, it has been predicted to have a mutation, resistant mutation profile non-overlapping with that of imatinib, dasatinib, nilotinib, and bosutinib. But it remains to be determined how it performs against compact mutations. And in general, we need more in vivo data in terms of mutation sensitivity for asciminib, because we have learned from past experience that the in vitro predictions based on IC50 values do not always recapitulate what we can see in vivo. Then there are other agents that are currently in clinical development. We have olverembatinib, formerly HQP1351, that is a third generation TKI active against the T315I mutation that is currently undergoing phase 2 clinical evaluation. And then we have also PF114 and vodobatinib, but these molecules are at an earlier stage of clinical development.
Okay, thank you. Have new and emerging therapies show a greater duration or depth of response? And how do the safety profiles of new and emerging therapies compare with previously established available tyrosine kinase inhibitors?
Well, in your introduction, you have already mentioned the very nice response rates achieved with asciminib and the very good tolerability. As far as novel agents in clinical development are concerned, olverembatinib is the most advanced in clinical development, and the results from the multicenter phase 1-2 clinical study conducted in China have just recently been published. So olverembatinib was very effective in heavily pretreated CML patients with chronic phase and accelerated phase. And interestingly, response rates were particularly high in patients positive for the T315I mutation and also for several T315I inclusive compact mutations. Olverembatinib was also very well tolerated, with the thrombocytopenia as the main treatment-related adverse event. However, it has to be borne in mind that the median age of the Chinese patients enrolled in this clinical trial was 15 years lower than the median age of CML patients in the Western countries. And Chinese patients had very few comorbidities and risk factors. So I think that we will need further studies in a patient population more similar to the ones we have in our hands.
Okay, thank you very much for the answers for this interesting discussion. And in this section, we will focus on the new and emerging treatments, and we'll discuss how would they impact the management of chronic myeloid leukemia patients after two prior lines of treatment. When we summarize current and emerging treatment options for CML patients in third line setting to gain as much efficacy as possible, whilst preserve or even improve tolerability, there are two main strategies: to optimize doses of established TKIs, since we've learned from the OPTIC trial that lowering the dose according to treatment response did not compromise its efficacy and improve tolerability. And the second option is to use new drugs, ideally more efficient and safer, so the features which were already fulfilled with asciminib. And we can also think about some other possibilities, for example, combining asciminib with established ATP competitive inhibitors, and also about moving this promising drug into earlier lines or even into frontline setting, also in order to increase proportion of patients eligible for subsequent treatment discontinuation. And finally, also targeting leukemic stem cells is another strategy under research, potentially solving both main issues, efficacy as well as tolerability. So now, Simona, let's again look at some questions submitted by our audience that focus on this topic. How can we identify suitable patients for new and emerging therapies? And how do you think treatment pathways will incorporate new and emerging treatments?
Well, Daniela, for sure, the more options we have for multi-TKI-resistant patients, the better it is to improve the outcomes of this category of cases that still represent, in my opinion, an unmet medical need. Now, for treatment beyond second line, we have both asciminib and ponatinib. And we may envision treatment decision algorithms weighing cardiovascular risk and the severity of resistance, with asciminib probably becoming very soon the treatment of choice for all those patients with warning responses in which we would like to improve a molecular response, and also for those patients with more severe resistance and maybe mutations that have risk factors that create concern for the use of ponatinib. What is still difficult to foresee, in my opinion, is how mutation status will be incorporated in this decision algorithm, because we know that both asciminib and ponatinib are active against the T315I, and they are active against almost all individual mutations. What we do not know yet exactly is how asciminib performs against individual compact mutations, especially T315I incorporating compact mutations. So this is something that we'll need to refine in the near future. And of course, in the near future, it will also be interesting to see if asciminib may have also a place in earlier lines of therapy, because it could really be a revolution. Clinical trials are ongoing with asciminib being combined with ATP competitive inhibitors. And this could really revolutionize our treatment paradigm, because in my opinion, it would be really the best strategy to overcome as well as to prevent the occurrence of mutations.
Yes, I agree completely. Are the mechanism of action of the different TKIs significant in clinical practice?
You know, the first inhibition strategy that was pursued in CML has seen the development of many ATP competitive molecules, but it has long been known that another strategy existed, that is allosteric inhibition. The N-terminus of ABL undergoes a post-translational modification called myristylation, and the myristate moiety binds a deep and narrow pocket in the C-terminus of the molecule of BCR-ABL, thus acting as a physiological switch to turn off kinase activity. You know that as a result of the translocation, this portion of ABL is lost, and so the this physiological control mechanism is lost, and this is one of the reasons why BCR-ABL kinase activity is constitutively active, but the pocket is preserved and asciminib structurally mimics myristate state. So binding to this pocket, it can switch the kinase off. This is very important in clinical practice as it accounts for the main strength of asciminib. So on one hand, the much better tolerability due to the very high specificity of binding, and on the other hand, the activity against mutations that are resistant to ATP competitive inhibitors that map in a completely different region as compared to where asciminib binds.
Okay, thank you. How could new and emerging treatments impact the management of CML after two prior lines of treatment? And what is the role of the multidisciplinary team in incorporating these agents into the treatment paradigm?
Well, I think that asciminib will fill an important gap both in patients with the failure of TKI therapy and mutations and in warning patients in which we would like to improve the molecular response level. You have mentioned something that is very important, very critical for optimal management of our CML patients nowadays, the multidisciplinary team, healthcare professionals from different fields working together to maximize the therapeutic success and to minimize the risk for our patients and also their non-compliance, because from toxicity derives also non-compliance of patients. So to avoid drug interactions, to better assess the risk factors, to check if the dosage is the one we really need, and to prevent as much as possible the adverse events, or to better handle them if we see some adverse events. The hematologist should really work together and in close cooperation with pharmacists, with pneumologists, with cardiologists, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I completely agree. And sometimes I feel it like just an opportunity that we, such as hematologists, can go back to our roots of general medicine. So it's also some challenge for us. Thank you very much. It was a very interesting discussion. So let me summarize. Despite a huge progress with chronic myeloid leukemia and its therapy over the past two decades, significant unmet needs still exist, and among them, treatment of patients after two prior lines of treatment has been still a challenging issue. Based on the latest clinical trial data, both asciminib and dose-modified ponatinib are excellent options, very much needed in clinical practice. The long-term data, mainly toxicity data, for both possibilities still requires some time to mature, and similarly, data from clinical trials testing asciminib in earlier lines as well as add-on strategy results are eagerly expected. So thank you, Simona, for your very interesting insights about selecting the optimal treatment for patients with chronic myeloid leukemia, resistant and or intolerant to previous treatment lines.
Thank you, Daniela.
Thank you. And I would also like to thank the audience for participating in this educational activity. I hope you enjoyed the session and found the insights offered here useful for further developing your clinical practice.
Thank you, Professor Soverini and Dr. Zhachkova, for your practical insights for chronic myeloid leukemia clinicians. And thank you to our audience for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access further activities on chronic myeloid leukemia on Touch Oncology at www.touchoncology.com.